welcome to Tuned to Yesterday, broadcasting programs from radio's golden era. I'm your host, Mark Levanier. Coming up in this hour, quiz shows. Later on, we hear Information Please from 1941. But right now, it's Take It or Leave It from April 4th, 1948 on NBC, with Gary Moore as Master of Ceremonies.
Eversharp presents Take It or Leave It, starring Gary Moore. Time to sharpen your wits with Eversharp. Presented by Eversharp, manufacturers of famous Eversharp precision writing instruments, and Eversharp chicken injector razors and blades. Take it or leave it, the most exciting game you ever played. The game that doubles in interest with every question asked. The game with a giant jackpot race. Well, friends, when you take your first look at the star of our show tonight, you'll know right away that it's April. The devil grass on the top of his head is beginning to turn green. And here he is, Gary Moore.
Well, thank you. Thank you very much, Ken Niles, for nothing, incidentally. And good evening, ladies and gentlemen. A very happy April the 4th to you all.
Say, this is really a month, isn't it? April is the month for courtship.
Yeah, I know that, Ken. All this month, they've been trying to ship John L. Lewis to court. But I know what this... That's a political-type joke fought with no significance. Ignore it. But I know what you mean, Ken. This is the time of year for romance. Why, as I went walking through the woods this morning, I heard two voices saying, I love you. Ouch! I love you. Ouch! I love you. Ouch! What was that? Two porcupines necking.
Oh, yes, it's spring, all right. And not only that, Gary, it's leap year, too. Do you realize that all over the country, girls are proposing marriage to boys?
Yes, and with the new draft situation, do you know a lot of the boys are accepting? In spring or high water, we must forge ahead with a large game of Take It or Leave It.
Well, I agree. This week, our second guesser's microphone is set up at the bedside of former Staff Sergeant George Engel at the Birmingham Veterans Administration Hospital in Van Nuys, California.
That's great. We'll give him a call when the time comes. Meanwhile, let's extend a welcoming hand to our first contestant, who tonight is Mrs. Rosalind Krause of Philadelphia, Pennsylvania. Very nice of you to come all the way from Philadelphia just to help us sell pencils. You know that, don't you?
Well, it's nice to be here.
You know, I heard, listening to Fred Allen tonight on the way down to work, listened to him every Sunday. Bless him, he's so wonderful. He had a wonderful, wonderful remark. Somebody, I can remember the gag. Well, they said that pretty soon there will be the animals will completely overcome the human beings and there will be no people left. And somebody says, well, what will the world be like with no people? He said, it'll be like Philadelphia on a Sunday.
Thing to say.
You agree with that, Mrs. Clark?
No, I don't.
If Fred Allen is listening in, take that. Yeah. I guess that fixed him. Well, how do you feel about playing Take It or Leave It tonight, Mrs. Clark?
Well, I think it should be fun.
Good. You don't have to, you know. We can go backstage and shoot crap or something. Let's try it, shall we?
Sure.
All right, what category do you want to talk about?
18.
Number 18, the last one in the book, huh? All right, this is called Women's Colleges, Name the State. In what state is each of the women's colleges? Did you go to college, Mrs. Clark?
No, I didn't.
You didn't? You know something about them?
Well, I think so.
Well, there's one of them in here I know you're going to know. All right, for $1, where is Smith?
That's in Massachusetts.
Is right. For $1, you have it, absolutely. I have an idea that we're $64 poorer already.
Well, I hope so.
All right, you got one. Shall we go for two?
Uh-huh.
All right, for $2, Wellesley. Where is Wellesley?
Wellesley is in Massachusetts.
That's right. We're ever shop at $2. Oh, good. Do you want to go for four? Please say yes.
Mm-hmm.
All right. This one you've got to know. Where is Bryn Mawr?
Philadelphia. Outside of Philadelphia.
That's right. The state is Pennsylvania for $4. You got 40. You want to go for 8? From here on in, I'm guaranteeing nothing. You're on your own.
Oh, all right.
All right. Skidmore. Where is Skidmore?
Skidmore, I think it's in...
Well, give me a hint what's on your mind. What does the state start with?
I think an N.
Well, you're right, you know. What do you think it is?
I think it's in New York.
It is, for $8. Yeah. You were. All right, you got eight. You want to go for 16?
Yeah.
For $16, where is Bennington? Bennington College for Women.
It's in the South, I think.
Oh. Oh?
Bennington.
Bennington, yes.
Bennington.
You would be awfully wrong in that direction, I'll tell you that, Mrs. Claus.
Well, it's either Massachusetts or New Hampshire.
I don't know.
Am I even warm?
Well, in this, yes, you're warm, only it's colder up there. I mean, it's, One more guess, Mrs. Claus. You've had four so far as I count back. Bennington?
Massachusetts.
Oh, I'm sorry. That's not the answer, Mrs. Claus. Thanks so much. We'll stick around for the debt. I'm sorry you had to fall down, but it gives our second guesser his first chance to stand up and be counted. Tonight, friends, our second guesser's microphone is installed at the bedside of former Staff Sergeant George Engel at the Birmingham Veterans Administration Hospital in Van Nuys, California. Every time one of our regular contestants fails to answer a question correctly, George Engel will not only get a chance to answer that question, but to go on and complete the category, thus copying himself the top prize. He will stay at his microphone throughout the show, and every time a regular contestant fails, he gets another crack at the purse strings. So let's send a warm greeting way across the San Fernando Valley to Ward D1 South at Birmingham Veterans Administration Hospital and George Engel. Georgie, can you hear me?
Yeah, fine.
Yeah, everything Anna knows his own mind. Tell us something about yourself, George. How old are you?
I'm 25, girl.
You're 25?
Yeah.
Where's your hometown?
Small town, Tabor, Iowa.
What, again?
Tabor, Iowa.
Tabor, Iowa?
Yeah.
Do they know that you're going to be on the show tonight out there in Tabor?
Yeah, they know.
Oh, isn't that wonderful? Suppose they're listening in, huh?
I imagine they're all gathered around the radio.
Are you married, George?
Yes.
Where's your wife tonight?
In London, England.
Now, I don't follow this. Now, who's she trying to get away from? You or your in-laws in Tabor? What is your wife doing in London?
She went over there to see her folks.
She's an English girl?
That's right.
Well, where'd you meet her?
In London.
Well, I mean, where? During the last war?
Yes.
Oh, that's wonderful, George. When's she coming back?
Soon, I suppose.
Well, say, listen, I'll tell you what, Hattie, will you take a note? Let's make a record of this show for George Engel so that he can save it. When his wife comes back, she can hear it, okay? Okay, George, I'll tell you what also. It looks like you got stuff in a kind of tough category here. We'll carry on with it. Mrs. Klaus went down on the $16 question, which is, where is Bennington College? Have you any idea of the answer?
Oh, I'm not, I don't go to women's colleges.
I can say is, you foolish boy, you. Listen, a lot of good places where a girl can get educated nowadays. And Smith and Wellesley, the balcony of her local movie theater. You got any ideas on the answer?
I think it's in Vermont.
You couldn't be right. It's for $16. All right, George, you want to go for 32?
Women's College. Yeah, go ahead.
Is dying out there. I don't blame him. This is a horrible category for a guy to get. Vassar. Where is Vassar? I'll give you this hint. The answer has already been given tonight. I mean by that, it's the same answer that was given for one of the other questions.
Must be in,
Do me a favor. Don't say Massachusetts. That's
No,
it.
I won't. Ohio?
Oh, yes. You got any ideas?
No, I haven't.
Oh, dear. Take a guess. I'll tell you what. Take a guess and say New York. What's your answer?
New York.
That's right. I shouldn't give this much help, but any guy who gets stuck with this thing deserves it. Women's colleges. Do you want to go for 64? I'll tell you this. I can't give you any help on this last one. You can take your 32 and sit down. Oh, you're lying, God, aren't you? Stay there. Or you can go for the 64. What do you want to do?
Let's try it. I mean, I haven't lost anything so far.
Well, you could lose 32, you know. It's as good as in the bank. All right, you want to go up with 64?
Yeah, go ahead.
Where is Goucher College?
Goucher.
Did I hear you say you take the 32?
Yes, I...
All right, you have $32. Kills my local pride. Goucher is in Maryland, my home state. Goodness, I run around with Goucher girls as a kid. Well, where am I? I'm up to our next contestant, Mr. Edward Kelly of Chicago, Illinois. Hello, Mr. Kelly. How are you?
Pretty good, Mr. Moore.
You are not the Ed Kelly from Chicago.
No, sir. No, no.
All right, good. I thought I was going to have to vote for you before you got out here. You married, sir?
Yes, sir.
Is your wife here with you tonight?
Yes, she's down there in the audience.
Isn't it awful hard if you marry him to just follow you around all the time?
You can't get away out here, anyway.
Mr. Kelly, what category do you want to talk about?
Number 10.
Number 10. All right, let's see how you come along. And at this call, presidents, which came first? Each of these questions consists of the names of two presidents. You are to tell me which came first, and I must warn you that I can only give you one answer on these questions for obvious reasons, because if it isn't one, it's got to be the other, okay? For $1, which came first? Harding or Coolidge?
Harding.
Is right, Harding. $1. Harding in 1921, Coolidge followed him in 23. You have $1. Do you want to go for two, Mr. Kelly? All right, for $2. Which came first, Johnson or Jackson?
I think I knew Jackson.
Jackson is right, whatever shot for $2. Yes. Johnson was in the White House in 1865, and Jackson was in the White House way back in 1829. BNB. That's before the new
balcony.
He
followed
Monroe, didn't
he? You what? Monroe, didn't
he? He followed Monroe?
I think so.
Let's take the next question, shall we? I knew someday they were going to embarrass me by asking me something that wasn't on the paper. Since I'm dead, Mr. Kelly.
I'll only buy two questions, Mr. Moore.
The only difference between me and a moron is that I've got a paper in my hand. All right, you got $2. Do you want to go for four?
Yes, sir.
All right, which came first, Jefferson or Madison? Jefferson?
I'm going to take a chance on Jefferson.
You would be right with every shot for $4. You want to go for eight, Mr. Kelly?
Yes, sir.
All right, for $8, Cleveland or Taft?
Cleveland
is right with every shot for anybody. You know your subject, all right. All right, go. You want to go for 16?
Please.
For $16, which came first, Arthur or Fillmore? Take your time. I don't know. Don't worry. Arthur or Fillmore?
Wouldn't be Chester, would it?
What did you say?
I said it wouldn't be Chester, would it?
Is that your answer? I don't know.
I'm going to take a chance on you, Arthur.
The answer is Fillmore. I'm awful sorry, sir, and thank you very much. That means another crack at it for our second guesser, George Engel, who's sitting by his bedside microphone out of Birmingham Veterans Hospital. So far, George, you've won $32. Let's see how Lady Luck treats you this time. Obviously, the answer to that one was Fillmore, so I'm going to have to give you an alternate question for $16, okay?
Okay.
All right, who came first, Pierce or Van Buren?
Let's try Van Buren.
You would be right with every shot for $16. Right? You want to go for 32, George?
Yeah, yeah.
Go All right, ahead. For 32, who came first, Tyler or Polk? I said, who came first, Tyler or Polk? I said, who came first?
I heard you.
What's your answer?
I'm thinking.
Listen very carefully. Who came first? Or Polk?
Tyler, Gary.
Oh, no coaching from the audience. All right, you got $32. Do you want to go for 64?
I got 64 now.
You have with a 32 you got in the last category. Do you want to try to out that?
Yeah, let's go.
All right, which came first, John Adams or John Quincy Adams?
John Adams.
What do you say? What do you say? John is right for $64. Thanks very much, Ken Adams and Company. And now, ladies and gentlemen, this is Jerry Moore again with another section of Take It or Leave It. Our next contestant is Miss Mamie DeJardin. DeJardin, is that her? DeJardin.
DeJardin, that's correct.
Of Los Angeles. I'm afraid I still haven't got that pronunciation correct.
DeJardin.
DeJardin. Yes. Awfully nice to see you, Mr. DeJardin. Is it Miss or Mrs.?
Mrs.
It's Mrs. DeJardin. Is Mr. DeJardin here with you?
No. I've been a widow for 20 years.
Oh, really? I'm sorry to hear that. Okay, I'll tell you what. Now, usually, when we have married ladies up here, we have their husbands come up and stand by and to make them feel more comfortable. Do you feel more comfortable with a big, strong man?
No.
You wouldn't?
I'm all right alone.
Really? I'll tell you, there is a fellow who's been hanging around in the wings for a couple of weeks here. Looks very lonesome. You, young man with the red hair, come out and stand by this lady. You, boy. Young man with the red hair.
Oh, yeah. Mind coming?
What is your name, young man?
My, the eyes of Texas is on you, isn't it?
This, ladies and gentlemen, in case you haven't gathered by his voice, is Red Skelton. Oh, I know that you know. I was explaining to our listening audience. Red, what you doing? Rehearsing your show across the hall?
Mm-hmm, yeah.
For next Tuesday?
Yeah, for Tuesday night.
How's it look?
Well,
I know how that is.
We have a preview, see, then we pick out what all the good jokes, we just, you know, sort of throw them to one side. And then the whole show stinks, but, you know.
It never does when I'm
ain't good, but it's clean.
Jeff, you want to help Mrs. DeJardin get through this category?
Sure.
Oh,
all right. All right, Mrs. DeJardin. Mrs. DeJardin, what category do you want to talk about?
I'll take 9.
Category number 9. All right, let's see what happens with this. Red, stand by. Oh, fine. You ready, Red?
Oh, I'm ready, yep. Could louse you up and take that away from you and ask you to play.
You could, I'd quit right now. This is called, you're going to love this, Red. This is called Name the Flower. Each of these questions can be answered by naming a flower for $1. What flower do you associate with Holland, Mrs. DeJardin?
Hollyhock. Tulip.
Tulip is right for $1. Yeah. You agree with that, Clem?
Yes, yes. I didn't really know the answer. I was just sort of smelling around.
You got $1. Do you want to go for 2, Mrs. DeJardin? All right. What flower was this song written about?
Peach, apple blossom.
Apple blossom time.
Apple blossom time. Beautifully played, Cookie. Yeah, I can almost smell the apple blossoms.
I can see him wiggling like the worm in the apple.
You got $2, Red. Should you go for 4?
Yes.
Go for 4, huh? All right, here you go. From what?
I think he's going to go for less than that. He's getting kind of peaked. He knows it, so I'm with you.
That's going to help a lot. From what flower is the drug opium obtained?
Poppy.
The poppy is right for $4.
I was going to say mommy, but...
That would have been wrong. For $4, you're lucky. You want to go for 8?
Yeah.
For $8, what flower are you as shy as when you're shy? Mrs. DeJardin, have you any idea?
You take it. It's all yours.
Violet is right with Never Sharp for $8. You got eight. You want to go for 16?
As long as you can help.
All right, for $16. What is the flower of France?
A fleur-de-lis.
The fleur-de-lis is right with Never Sharp for $16.
I should have known this. Parlez-vous
français? Oh, yes.
Je voulais couper your prediction highway.
You got 16. You want to go for 32? For 32. What flower symbolizes Scotland?
Heather.
Heather is right. Whatever shop of
I only came in because it's raining out.
$32. You want to go for 64, Mrs. Desjardins?
Yes.
All right. What flowers do most brides carry? Orange blossoms is right for $64.
Just a minute, lady. I want half.
Don't forget your pen and pencil, Fat Mrs. Scott.
With me, and I'm dead.
That brings us to our next contestant, who is Mr. William Wittenberg of Los Angeles.
How are you?
Nice to see you. We're going to have to hurry along a little bit. You know, our program is followed by the Philip Harris Show starring Morris Height, and we've got to hurry along. May I ask you, by the way, what you received as a gift tonight?
A beautiful pen and ever sharp pen and repeater pen and pencil set.
Every Sharp Skyline pen and repeater pencil set. And may I remind you that this new pen has an extra large 14-karat gold nib point for smooth, skip-proof writing. Okay, what category do you want to go for?
One.
All right. Oh, Cookie, stand by. This is called Orchestra, Famous Encores. All of these songs are old-time hits that have achieved a second popularity in the past few years. Right now, we'll have them played for you by Cookie Fairchild and his It's Always Fair Weather When They Finish Together Orchestra. You tell me how many you know.
April
Shower is right for $1. Let's move in a little closer and talk a little louder, Mr. Wittenberg. You have $1. Do you want to go for two?
Yes, sir.
All right, for $2, Cookie.
Shine
on Harvest Moon is right for $2. Now you're coming along, all right?
Very well, thank you.
All right, you want to go for four?
Three.
Here we go for $4, Cookie.
Things in life are free.
Couldn't be more right for $4. All right, George, you're smart. What's your occupation, Mr. Wittenberg?
I'm a window washer, sir.
You're a window washer?
Yes, sir.
Are you? Here, where?
Here in Los Angeles in Hollywood.
That must be a pretty good job, a window washer in Hollywood, you know?
Well, I make it pretty well.
I mean, where are the windows that you are?
In houses and in office buildings. Stores.
That sounds kind of interesting, you know. I was reading in the paper the other day about the thing that scientists are working on. They're going to make dresses for women out of glass. You shouldn't be looking forward to that. As a window washer, you'll have kind of... You got $4, Mr. Wittenberg. Do you want to go for eight?
Yes, sir.
All right, Cookie, here we go. That's not the answer. We're going to have to ask you to stick around for the jackpot question. Thank you very much. Oh, it's going to be a hot time in the old Veterans Hospital tonight. Once again, our second guest who gets to air his knowledge. So come in, George Engel, from your bedside mic at Birmingham Veterans Hospital. Let's see how you do. You know the name of that tune?
How's Pregging My Heart.
Was right for $8. We're going to have to hurry along. You want to go for 16, George?
Yeah.
All right, listen.
I'm looking over a four-leaf clover.
He's right for $16. Why do you want to go for 32?
Yeah.
All right, listen carefully.
One.
What?
once in a while or so.
No, I'm sorry, George. The answer is, what'll I do? Too bad, man. Thank you. Brings us up to the jackpot question. Tonight we have the sum of $256 in the jackpot, if Skelton didn't steal it, and all of the contestants are going to race for it. The first one with the right answer gets the whole amount, and if nobody wins, the money will be added to next week's jackpot. Okay, this is Jerry Moore again, friends, with our jackpot question, which tonight is worth $256. Remember, friends, this is strictly a race. Every contestant has an equal chance. If a regular contestant here on our stage gets the answer first, you will hear a bell. And if Sergeant George Engel gets the answer first, you'll hear a whistle from the hospital. So get out your Evershops, get ready. Here's the $256 jackpot question. What state is called the Centennial State? Nobody won, and so the $256 jackpot money will be added to next week's jackpot. The jackpot question was, what state is called the Centennial State? And the answer is Colorado. Well, that doesn't seem to get. I guess you were a great second guesser tonight, George Engel, and give our regards to all the guys out there in the hospital, will you?
I'll do that, Gary. I'll flop.
You're welcome, boy, and don't forget to tune in next week, friends, to another session of Take It or Leave It. Until then, this will be Gary Moore saying bye-bye. Bye, Evershop. This is Ken Niles saying good night for Evershop.
Take It or Leave It on Tuned to Yesterday from April 4th, 1948 on NBC. It's an hour of quiz programs on Tuned to Yesterday. I'm your host, Mark Levanier. And now on to information, please, from Independence Day 1941 on the NBC Blue Network. With moderator Clifton Fadiman and special guests at that time, foreign correspondents John Gunther and Walter Durante. Durante has an interesting story, as he was a writer in Moscow during the 1920s and 30s. He even won a Pulitzer for his work in 1932, yet some 70 years later, the Pulitzer Committee is still considering rescinding the award due to an outcry from researchers and journalists claiming that his writings were either plagiarized or gave in to pro-Stalinist propaganda while he was writing there. At the time of this broadcast, he had been working at the New York Times as a foreign correspondent. It's information, please.
It's half past eight, New York time. Time to wake up America and stump the experts. Each week at this time, Lucky Strike offers you an opportunity to reduce the swelling on the heads of four famous intellectual giants. For every question we use, Lucky Strike pays out $10 plus a copy of the new Information Please quiz book. If your question stumps us, you get $25 more, plus a 24-volume set of the Encyclopedia Britannica. Send your questions to Information, Please, 480 Lexington Avenue, New York City. If our editorial staff edits your questions a bit, don't fret over it. In case of similarity, we'll have to be sole judge of who shall be paid, and all questions become the property of Information, Please. I present our Master of Ceremonies, the literary critic of the New Yorker magazine, Clifton Fadiman. Mr. Fadiman.
Ladies and gentlemen, as ever, Information Please is completely unrehearsed, informal, and quite go as you please. Tonight, our two regulars are here, John Kieran, the sports maestro, and Franklin P. Adams of the New York Post's Conning Tower. Our two guests are, in a sense, competitors, because they're both famous authors, and they're both top-notch foreign correspondents. One of them, John Gunther, is an old friend of ours, and the other, Walter Durante, we're very glad to welcome as a new friend. Now remember, for each question missed, Lucky Strike rings up $25. And that's paid out to the sender, plus 24 volumes of the Encyclopedia Britannica. Now we'll start with a question coming to us from Harry Chamey of Los Angeles. Get 3 out of 4 on this very simple question, gentlemen. What is the term of surrender in each of these contests? In chess, when you surrender, you do what? Mr. Kieran?
You are mated in chess.
And not only in chess, but that is not surrender, necessarily. When you actually do give up in chess, what do you say? What's the term that you use?
Resign.
Resign, that's right. That's what I'm trying to
do. Resign without being mated, you may be thoroughly discouraged and see no way out.
Yes, that so often happens. How about in the case of a naval battle, when you surrender, you do what?
Strike the flag.
Strike the colors or the flag, as Mr. Durante says. Mr. Gunther had his hand up, too. The term of surrender in the case of a political election. In the case of a political election, Mr. Gunther.
Well, you concede defeat.
You concede the election, that's right. And when two kids are fighting, and one of them wishes to surrender, Mr. Adams.
Enough.
Well, we used to use a different term. There's another term. Mr. Kieran?
The cry uncle?
Cry uncle is the one we used to use, but I think enough's perfectly all right.
That's kind of new, isn't it?
The next question comes from Joe Barnes of the Herald Tribune right here in New York. And it's directed, really, at Mr. Gunther and Mr. Durante, but you other boys can play along with us if you wish. Now, Mr. Durante and Mr. Gunther, can you imagine that you were really back in Europe, as you used to be in the old days, actually doing a full day's job instead of the sort of thing you're doing now, just answering questions?
Are you sure we ever did a full day's job?
Oh, I'm positive. I remember that day, as a matter of fact. Now, what would you make of this message, gentlemen, if you received it tonight by cable from Europe? Now, here's the message. Servicer, up look, favorite obit, big shot, down shot, pre-dawn, smorning. I'll go over all this, gentlemen. Junkering, redsward, sans shoot, come goal, quote, save humanity, unquote, bracket, hallelujah, unbracket. Now let's begin. Servicer would mean what, Mr. Gunther?
Well, I suppose it means to the correspondent.
From the correspondent. Well, it's service. It means it's a service message, does it not, in cable language?
Yeah.
Now, here's the next phrase. Uplook, favorite obit. Uplook, favorite obit. What does that mean, Mr. Kieran?
That would mean dig out, get ready the obit of the person you would like most to publish an obit about.
Yes,
and we know who that is.
Yeah.
Beg pardon? Now, let's go on with it. Big shot, down shot, pre-dawn, smorning. Mr. Gunther.
Oh, the chief was shot down before dawn today, this morning.
Yes,
this morning.
The big shot in this case probably being...
Mr. Hitler.
Mr. Hitler, yes, as a guess. Junkering, Redsword. Junkering, Redsword.
Flying to Moscow.
Flying to Moscow.
Russia.
How?
In a Junkers.
In a Junker airplane, yes.
Tri-motor transport.
Sans chute would mean what, Mr. Durante? Sans chute.
Without a parachute.
Without a parachute, Mr. Adams. Right, Larry. That's very quick of you, Mr. Adams. Come goal, quote, save humanity, unquote. Come goal, quote, save humanity.
Go
unquote.
Or gold?
Gold, G-O-A-L. Come goal. Come goal.
Oh,
in order to win the war?
Beg pardon?
In order to win the war.
No. The word come means what?
With.
Come
with.
Goal. With the
with
purpose
goal.
Of. With the purpose of.
Quote.
Yeah.
Save humanity. Is there any other recent German emissary who's had that purpose in mind, flying?
Oh, Mr. Hess.
Mr. Hess, yes. In other words, he was flying toward the Reds with a parachute, without a parachute, I hope, with a goal similar to Hess's of saving humanity. And bracket, hallelujah, unbracket means simply what?
Do we have to say?
Sure.
Goody, goody.
Goody, goody, yes. Just hallelujah. As a matter of fact, Mr. Durante, it doesn't seem to me you save very much money using that odd language.
I never do use them.
You never do use them?
Never.
Just write at the
straight, just cut
out the A's,
B's, and O's.
Yes, I see. How does the boss like that when you do that?
Oh, New York Times is rich.
Yeah, it's very rich.
Mr. Kieran?
The next one from Norma Lay of Elmira, New York. It's about burial. Gentlemen, get 2 out of 3. Who is referred to as being buried in the following places, all of which, by the way, are watery places? Now, in the first case... Full fathom 5. Mr. Kieran.
Thy father lies, his bones are Carl made. That's supposed to be the father of Ferdinand, I believe the king of Naples.
Yes. That's a perfect response.
In the Tempest.
In the Tempest. Do you remember his name?
Not
a very important character. Alonso.
Oh, Alonso.
Alonso, that's right. The next one, next burial, in the billowy wave. The billowy wave. Mr. Adams.
Titwillow.
Titwillow. Little Tom Tit. What's the quotation?
And he threw himself into the billowy wave.
Plunged, maybe. Plunged himself into the billowy wave, and an echo arose.
From the suicide's grave.
Ah.
Oh, Willow. Tit Willow.
Oh, Tit Willow. Very nice. Thank you very much. Now, who is referred to as being buried in, quote, the raging brine? Though sometimes I believe it's the foaming brine. You may have your choice. The raging brine, the foaming brine. Mr. Adams, I can see you struggling to get it.
You almost have it, Mr. Adams. Mr. Gunther.
I just want to know if the next rhyme is Encarnadine.
No. Beautiful rhyme, but that isn't it.
Macbeth.
No, the next rhyme...
Clementine.
I beg your pardon?
Clementine.
That a boy, Mr. Adams. Very, very good. She led her ducks down the river. The weather, it was fine. You remember how it goes, Mr. Adams? Stubbed her toe against a sliver.
Fell into the foaming brine.
Yes. You say foaming, I say raging. And so forth. That gives us 3 out of 3. You gentlemen
are
very
bright. My darling Clementine, it is.
My darling Clementine. She is lost and gone forever.
Oh, you have it now, Mr. Durant.
Actually. The English is always a little slow, you know.
There's no keeping a secret from you, is there?
My God.
You sure can take a hint, Mr. Durant. Now, the next one is from Louise Marshall of Lowell, Massachusetts. Get 2 out of 3 again. 2 of the 3 events in each group that I'm going to read to you occurred in the same year. Which events are they, and what year was it? In other words, 2 of them occurred in the same year and 1 of them in a different year. The first 5-year plan, St. Louis lost the series in 4 straight. The stock market collapsed. Two of those events. Mr. Durante.
The stock market collapsed in the first 5-year plan.
The stock market collapsed in the first 5-year plan. No.
Yes.
No, not really. We may be wrong, Mr. Durante. I'll argue with you in a minute. Mr. Gunther.
I wouldn't dream of contradicting Mr. Durante, but I think the first 5-year plan started in October 1928.
Yes, that's right. And when to say, Mr. Kieran, how about St. Louis?
Well, that's how I would have guessed the other one right. St. Louis lost 4 straight to the Yankees in 1928.
How about it, Mr. Durante?
Yeah, but I have a rebuttal. It started theoretically in 1928. In October, but later on they counted from the 1st of 1929.
Your type of expert needs an hour program. Well, I think that Mr. Gunther and Mr. Kieran nevertheless are right, and we have to mark that as wrong. The first 2 events occurred in 28, and of course the stock market collapsed in 29, as a few of us oldsters remember. Now, the Italo-Ethiopian War begins, prohibition is repealed, there's a blood purge in Germany. 2 of those occurred in the same year. Which ones? Mr. Gunther, you had your hand up first.
Well, I have to work backwards. The Italo-Ethiopian War began in 1935, and the Hitler blood purge was in June 1934.
Keep going. You're wrong. You're half right, half wrong.
The Ethiopian War,
gentlemen, was in what year? Mr. Kieran?
33 was the repeal of prohibition,
yes,
wasn't it?
Yes, that's right. And the Ethiopian War was in what year?
35.
No, in 34.
I really beg your pardon.
Sure, it was not.
Really?
I really beg your pardon.
Hitler blood purge was June the 30th, 1934.
Well, do you mean to say that we're just a lot of reactionaries pushing things back?
You're
going
to have to do a lot of explaining next week.
You think so?
Because the Italo-Abyssinian War began on October 3rd, 1935.
I've never heard it said more dogmatically, Mr. Gunther. Now, you may be quite right. I'm going to stick to my card until I receive advice to the contrary from another set of experts we have here behind the scenes and call that wrong. Now, how about this one? Here's a set of 3 events. 2 of them occurred in the same year. The other didn't. Braddock defeated Bayer, the bank holiday, and the Reichstag fire. On my card, that's spelt without quotation marks.
You mean the American bank holiday?
The American bank holiday, yes. Mr. Adams.
That was in March 1933.
Keep going. Mr. Adams?
The other boys can take those other dates.
I know when
I didn't have a nickel.
Mr. Gunther.
The Reichstag fire was in 1933.
Also March.
Really?
Yes.
The last two were in 1933, then that's right. You're right. And Braddock defeated Bayer in what year?
Well, that was either, I think it was around 1936.
1935 it was.
Five?
Yes.
That's right, he skipped the year.
Well, we got this one right. That gives us only 1 right out of 3 and sends $25 to Miss Marshall, courtesy of Lucky Strike, plus a set of the Encyclopedia Britannica.
When are you going to check up about the Italo-Ethiopian War?
Almost immediately.
Well, she's gone.
You're kind of worried about that, aren't you?
No, I'm not worried. You should be.
I stick to my card. My card has a beautiful memory, generally. Here's one from Mrs. W.C. Johnson of Frederick, Oklahoma. Can you name 3 novels or plays in which a leading character is executed? Mr. Durante, will you start us off?
Sidney Carton in A Tale of Two Cities.
That would be quite right. Mr. Kieran?
That's mine, too.
I'm so sorry. You shouldn't never have done that, Mr. Durante. There are a number of others we might think of. Mr. Gunther?
The hero of Stendhal's, Rouge et Noir.
Yes, there's one. That gives us 2. Oh, think of... Want me to give you a hint? Think of a play. There you are, that's nice.
Joan of Arc.
Joan of Arc. St. Joan.
Yes.
St. Joan by George Bernard Shaw. And there are a number of others. An American Tragedy by Dreiser. Tess of the D'Urbervilles by Thomas Hardy as an executioner.
Native Son.
Native Son. Very good, Mr. Adams. That would give us four or five. And here's one from Noel Gordon of Detroit. Each of the following places has been mentioned in connection with the present invasion of Russia. Russia, by the way, is a place that Mr. Gunther once referred to as Durante's Inferno. Can you give another occasion on which each of these places played an important role historically? Now, we want to get two out of three if we can on that. Now, the first is Brest-Litovsk. We've been reading about that recently. Mr. Kieran.
That was where the peace treaty was signed between the Central Powers and Russia in World War Number One.
That's exactly right. What date?
That was...
Maybe I better not ask anything about dates.
In 1917, I believe.
No. Mr. Durante.
March 1918.
Yes. You and I are right, Mr. Durante. March 1918. That's quite right, Mr. Kieran. Now, how about... Here's another Russian name that's been mentioned in dispatches lately. Where else... when else was it mentioned? Sevastopol. Mr. Gunther.
Oh, during the Crimean War.
During the Crimean War. It was the scene of what?
A battle.
Well, I think more than a battle. Mr. Kieran.
Well, it was near the scene of the charge of the Light Brigade.
Mr.
That was Balaclava.
That was
a great siege.
Right.
It was the siege. It was the central point which they besieged, and the French took the Redan, and that won the city.
Yes. What was the one you mentioned, Mr. Adams?
Balaclava
is the Light Brigade.
Oh, I thought that was a Turkish candy, Balaclava. How about the Berezina River? The Berezina River. Mr. Durante.
Well, that is where Napoleon fought his last battle on Russian soil.
Yes.
Which was disastrous.
What date?
December 1812.
1812 would be right. Now, as long as we're talking about Russia, as so many of us are these days, I should like to take the opportunity of asking our two foreign correspondents what, in general, say about 20 words, they think of the present situation. Mr. Gunther, would you care to give an opinion on what's happening over there and what you think may come out of it?
In 20 words?
Well, I'll give you 22. And a date.
It's terribly hard to tell because so much depends on totally intangible factors like morale. I should think, not really knowing, Germans wouldn't have tried a campaign of such magnitude unless they were fairly sure that they could crack Russian morale in a reasonably short time. As to actual military operations, I don't know. I'd very much like to hear Mr. Durante's opinion.
Well,
on the whole, I'm
Mr.
just
Durante?
A little bit gloomy tonight, but maybe I won't be so gloomy tomorrow.
I hope you won't be.
Hope so, too.
Mr. Durante, do you have an opinion on it?
I'm less gloomy than most of the experts. The two facts, the fact of morale obviously applies, but the main question is whether the Russians are holding the line which they originally fortified. They spent 7 years fortifying it, and all their subsequent occupations, Riga, Estonia, Finland, Bessarabia, were all outposts as a glacis for the attack which they knew was coming. And now, are they fighting their main battle in the outer line? I don't see why they should, and I don't believe they are.
Well, in other words, you're much more optimistic about things than Mr.
Considerably more optimistic. I think that now the real opposition may begin.
Yes, but perhaps we shall know in a very few days. Or do you feel, as so many do, that this is the sort of war that will not be decided for a very, very long time?
If Stalin has his nerve, there's the three morales. There's the morale of the government, the morale of the people, and the morale of the army. The most important is Stalin's morale. If that keeps up, the war may go on for 5 years.
Oh, we must keep it up, by all means. Thank you very much, Mr. Gunther and Mr. Durante. Now, so far, Lucky Strike has paid out $25 and one set of the Encyclopedia Britannica. Now, here's one from Norman L. Folger of Summit, New Jersey. Get two out of three. Give the name of the minister in the British cabinet corresponding to each of the following in our American cabinet, and give the name of the department which he heads. Our Secretary of State, of course, is Mr. Cordell Hull. Who is his opposite number in Great Britain? Mr. Durante.
Eden, Anthony Eden.
Anthony Eden. And what is his portfolio called?
Minister of Foreign Affairs.
I don't think that's exactly it, is it, Mr. Gunther?
His Majesty's Principal Secretary of State for Foreign Affairs.
Well, that's very elegant. Is that exactly what it's called, Mr. Gunther? Thank you very much. Now,
His Britannic Majesty's
his
Principal
Britannic
Secretary.
His Britannic Majesty, yes. Now, our Secretary of War is Mr. Henry Stimson, who is his opposite number in England. Mr. Durante.
Captain Margison.
Captain David Margison. And yes, and what's his office called? Well, it is something pretty simple.
Secretary for War.
No, no. No, Mr. Adams.
His Britannic Majesty's Minister of War?
I think, yes. Just Minister of War, or if you want to use Mr. Gunther's elaborate phrase to be even more precise, that would be true, too. Now, our Secretary of the Navy is Mr. Frank Knox. What is his, Mr. Gunther?
Mr. A.V. Alexander. First Lord of the Emerald League.
I think he has a title.
No.
The Right Honorable.
Right Honorable.
Yes,
Right Honorable.
He's a Privy Councillor.
Yes, and what is his office called?
Well, right. He is called the First Lord of the Admiralty.
First Lord of the Admiralty, yes. That's quite right, yes.
But
that
there
gives
was some
three
obscure
out of
trick
three.
In there.
How about this one? That was very easy, I think. From Frank Morrill of Portland, Maine. This is about poetry. I'm going to ask you to identify the poem in which the poet does the following things. In the first case, get two out of three on this, he recalls the advice he was given when he reached his majority. Can you identify the poem in which that occurs? He recalls the advice he was given when he reaches his when he reached his majority. Mr. Adams.
That would might be the poem beginning "You Are Old, Father William."
I don't quite see how that would work in, Mr. Adams.
And I
it
in my youth. In Southey's poem, it
that
like
may
that.
Be. I was thinking of, yes. Who wrote that, Mr. Kerr?
Isn't that, well, it's either Houseman or...
It's only Houseman.
it is Houseman, as Mr. Kern was about to recollect. And, Mr. Kern, how do the lines go? Do you remember?
No, I forgot.
When I was 1 and 20, I heard a wise man say...
Give crowns?
And pounds and guineas, but not your heart away.
That's right. That's the advice. Well, that straightens us out. Now, how about this one? Identify the poem in which the poet describes an old man recalling his youth as a lawyer. An old man recalling his youth as a lawyer. Mr. Kieran.
Well, you mean in Hamlet, in the grave scene, where be his quiddities now, and what action he would take for battery against the gravedigger throwing his skull around?
That's a subtle one. I hadn't thought about that. That might get by. In fact, I think it will get by. Mr. Adams.
That's the one I said first.
That's right. Say it again.
You are old, Father William, and it ends in my... I took to the law.
Yes, and argued each case
and argued
with my
each
wife.
Case with my wife.
And the muscular strength that it gave to my jaw has lasted the rest of my life.
Thank you, John. That's right. Now, how about this one? Can you identify the poem in which the poet pleads for a childhood protector? He pleads for a childhood protector.
How old is he?
Who? Who? You mean the poet? Well, when the poet the poet is old and remembers himself as a child. Mr. Kieran, did you have it? Mr. Adams?
Backward, turn backward.
Don't see how that applies. A childhood protector. Woodman, spare that tree, touch not a single bough, remember
in youth?
Youth
it sheltered me.
And I'll
and
protect
I'll
it
protect
now.
And I'll protect it now.
That's right. Well, that gives us two out of three. Last one we got wrong. Now, how about this one from May E. Teal of Delaware County, Pennsylvania? Speaking of international affairs in the 20th century, it seems proper with two experts on them here this evening. In what movement or agreement was the United States one of 21 nations? Mr. Gunther.
Well, the Havana Conference is one of the most recent of them.
How many were there? 21?
There are 21 American republics,
yes.
20 in Latin America and the United States.
And were there 21 represented at Cuba?
I believe so,
in
yes.
Cuba? Was there any other that you can think of, Mr. Kieran?
There's one further down, way down in South America.
Yes.
They have them every 3 or 4 years. There's one in Lima, one at Panama, one at Montevideo.
Yeah, I think that probably the one Mr. Kieran was thinking of, the one in Lima, the Pan-American Conference in 1938. Now, in what movement or agreement was the United States one of nine nations? One of nine nations. Mr. Durante.
Kellogg Pact?
No, I think not.
The Nine Pop Act of China.
That's right. What date?
22.
Mm-hmm. No, 1921 or 22. I think I'm going to be generous with you. Guarantors of Chinese integrity. Now, in which agreement was the United States one of 15 original signatories? One of 15. Mr. Gunther.
This is a guess, but there was a conference in Brussels at the beginning of the Sino-Japanese War. I think 15 nations took part.
I wouldn't know, and I would hesitate to contradict you. The one I had in mind was the Kellogg-Briand Pact that Mr. Durante impulsively mentioned a little while ago, also called the Pact of Paris in 1928. Well, that gives us two out of three. Can you identify this one? See what you can do with this one. This comes from W. Everett Zilm of Philadelphia. Can you give me four cliches or common expressions that mention denominations of American money? For example, a penny for your thoughts would be one. Mr. Kieran.
Those fellows are a dime a dozen.
That's a good one. Mr. Adams?
You can bet your bottom dollar.
You can bet your bottom dollar would be a very good one. Mr. Kieran again.
That isn't worth 30 cents.
All right. Mr. Dryan, did you have one in mind?
Oh, that was mine.
There's a very famous one, Mr. Kieran.
Can I once again put in my 2 cents worth?
Mr. Adams?
A plug nickel.
A plug nickel. What this country needs is a good 5 cent cigar. Brother, can you spare a dime? Then a phrase that, going up into astronomical figures, a phrase we might remember today. Millions for defense. Can you think of any others?
Not 1 cent for tribute.
And, yes? don't take any wooden nickels. Did anyone mention that? Pass the buck might be another one. And probably the most famous phrase of all using any denomination of American money.
The scent
money.
Of the roses may hang round it still.
That's a dandy. I was thinking of every question we use, Lucky Strike pays out $10. That, too, is a phrase that's getting to be very widely known. This evening, Lucky Strike has paid out $25 and 1 set of the Encyclopedia Britannica. Lucky Strike thanks you, Mr. Durante and Mr. Gunther, for your able assistance tonight, and particularly for the ad lib remarks on the Russian situation, which we're very glad to get. Next week, the old trio will be on hand, Mr. Levant, Mr. Adams, and Mr. Kieran, together with our guest, who has recently been seen in Pride and Prejudice, Miss Mary Boland, who's now touring the Straw Hat Circuit. Remember, for every question we use, whether or not it's answered correctly, the sender gets the sum of $10. And if the question should happen to stump our experts, you not only get $25 more, but in addition, the complete 24-volume set of the Encyclopedia Britannica. Send your letters with questions and the correct answers to Information, Please, 480 Lexington Avenue, New York City.
This is the National Broadcasting Company.
Information, Please, on Tuned to Yesterday from July 4th, 1941 on the NBC Blue Network. And that brings to a close this hour of quiz shows on Tuned to Yesterday. Be sure to be with us next time for more great programs from radio's yesteryear. Until our next hour together, I'm Mark Levonier. Thanks for tuning in.